Welcome to Podcast Gurus, brought to you by GH Marketing. Our guest today is Jason Barnard, the CEO of Calicube and podcast host of Branded Search and Beyond podcast. Jason is also a writer and digital marketer known for the Brand SERP Guy, known as the Brand SERP Guy. Today, expect to learn the importance of acknowledging panels on Google. Today, expect to learn the importance of knowledge panels on Google, representing factual information about individuals or companies. Discover the importance of creating a personal website with an entity home for verification and consolidation of information, and explore the role of SEO in packaging and presenting branding efforts for visibility in search results for your podcast. And explore the role of SEO and packaging in presenting branding efforts for visibility in search results. Before we begin, please remember to subscribe wherever you listen to this podcast. And if you're there, please also leave us a review. 5 stars do amazing things for the podcast, and we're going to keep bringing you all the different gurus in the podcast industry to explain to you the different ways you can use your podcast to help and grow your business. And with that, here's Jason.
So Jason, can you tell me about what brand SERP means? Actually, if we go back to the basic definitions, what is SERP for the people who might not be that aware of those SEO technicalities?
Yep, I can explain that. SERP is Search Engine Results Page. And strangely enough, I was in the industry, the SEO industry, search engine optimization industry, for a long time before I knew what that meant. And today, I forget that it isn't really obvious what acronyms mean and that we need to start this kind of show with an explanation that SERP, SERP, which I will say a lot, is Search Engine Results Page. And most of the time I talk about Google, but you also get a SERP, a Search Engine Results Page, on Bing, which belongs to Microsoft. And now we're moving towards assistive engines, which are things like ChatGPT, Perplexity, where you're having a conversation with a machine, where we no longer talk about search engine results page, we talk about a conversation. So they're conversational engines. And whether it's a search engine like Google or an assistive engine like ChatGPT, at the end of the day, you can look at them all as recommendation engines. We're asking them for recommendations to solutions to our problem. Oh, and then I've got Brand SERP, because the Brand SERP is the search engine results page for a brand name, which can be a person, it can be a corporation, it can be a music group, it can be a film, it can be a podcast. A brand is a brand name. And somewhere along the lines, if we have a personal brand, our name is our brand name.
Mm. So let's go for the 101 approach on this. Because when I'm thinking about Google search results, I'm thinking of me, actually, egoistically, Googling something like, hey, recipe for pizza dough. Why does the brand here comes into play?
This is a huge question that very few people actually ask me. Everybody assumes that I do SEO, search engine optimization. And search engine optimization is trying to get to the top of the results for a term like recipe for cookie dough.
Yeah.
I don't do that.
Okay.
I optimize for when people search your name or your company name. And that means it's the bottom of funnel audience. So we focus on the people who already know who you are and they're researching you or trying to get to your website to buy from you. Or perhaps researching you as a journalist or researching you as a potential hire. So anybody who will do business with you will Google your name at some point. And it's phenomenally important and it's hugely overlooked. These people are bottom of funnel, ready to do business with you. You need to make sure that that search engine results page for your name or your corporation name is absolutely perfect because you want to impress them. It's your Google business card.
I love that. So actually, let's take a practical example to get to understand that concept a little bit more, which seems to be fascinating. If I Google Guillaume Jouvencel, the first thing that pops up is my LinkedIn profile. Is that a good thing? Or what should I be expecting people to find knowing that what I do is podcast services? How should I come across on Google if my brand SERP was optimized?
Right. Well, it's better than nothing. And that was very rude of me and I do apologize.
All good.
It's
love
you.
That.
It's you okay. And it's LinkedIn and that's professional. So it's helpful. Right. So worst case scenario is it's somebody different. Or it's a social profile you don't like and it doesn't represent you professionally and it talks about your skiing holiday on TikTok, let's say. So from a professional perspective, for your personal brand, you want to be sure, number one, that you come out top, and number two, that the first result is professional. LinkedIn is professional. I would say the first result should be your own website and not your corporation website, your personal website. And a lot of people say to me, I don't want a personal website. I'm not interested. I'm not important enough. We're all important enough to have a personal website. Even if it's just to have one page or two pages that say who we are, what we do, who we serve, and why they should work with us. So your website is the start, the very beginning of your self-determination in search and assistive engines. Your ability to educate Google, ChatGPT, Bing, Perplexity, Google Gemini, and all these machines that are to come, who you are, what you do, which audience you serve, and why you're credible. If you don't tell them who you are, you're letting them guess. And letting them guess is a huge mistake. So self-determination today and tomorrow starts with your own website, and that should rank number one for your name. And that allows you to give your personal brand narrative to the subset of their users who are your audience, searching your name, ready to do business with you or ready to engage with you.
Mm. What are the type of results that you see coming from an optimized brand SERP? The reason I'm asking this, Jason, to dig a little bit deeper into this is when I'm looking for a service, right? I'm going to look for podcast services. Eventually, I'll find GHM Marketing. Then I'll enter into the funnel, get into a discussion with the founder, me. And then I will eventually be looking up Guillaume Jouvencel on Google search. That's the very end of the funnel. That's such a limited scope.
Yeah.
Is it?
Right. Yes. A lot of people get confused or forget that small volume is not necessarily bad. If I've got 100,000 people seeing my search result, but they've got no idea who I am, how likely are they to buy from me? And that's typically what SEO does, what search engine optimization does. It says, if you rank number one, you're at the top, somebody's searching for podcast agency or podcast production services, we'll click on the first link and buy. And that's very, very unlikely.
Right.
So SEO is founded on not a mistaken idea, but a distorted idea. That might be true if I'm buying something that costs €1, €2, €3, maybe €5. If I'm buying a reasonably priced product or service, I will not buy from the first person that Google shows me on a search result for a generic term like podcast marketing services. What I will do is research, and this is the key for me. The word research and search are very similar, but they're not the same. The person will research you, and they will research you not only on Google, but also YouTube, TikTok, Facebook, Forbes magazine, podcasting services, media.com, whatever your industry media site is. People will not engage with you and buy a high-ticket service without researching you. Searching is part of it, but it's not the whole story. But most journeys will include a search on your personal name or a brand name, your corporation name. And as a business leader, you will know people do business with people.
Yeah.
And if they're going to buy a service from your company where you're taking their reputation in your hand by producing a podcast for them, they want to know who you personally are, Guillaume.
Mm-hmm.
And they're likely to search your name. And what they see when they search your name will establish in their mind Google's opinion of you. And they're using Google because they trust Google. So Google's opinion will become at least partially their opinion. Your brand, your personal brand, is what Google says it is. That's huge.
That's so good. How important is SEO for your personal website? And the reason I'm asking this, Jason, is I was running a little search whilst you were explaining us this concept. And I entered your website on Ahrefs, which is a tool that allows to see domain authority and this kind of stuff. Your jasonbarnard.com website is pretty well optimized SEO-wise. So how important is that?
Not very, is the answer.
Interesting.
And that's good news for everybody, because SEO is geeky. So it's great news that I can tell you most of what we do at CaddyCube is marketing and branding, and we just package it for the machines. SEO is simply packaging your branding and your marketing for the machines. Google, Bing, Perplexity, ChatGPT. So you look at my website and you say it's well optimized for SEO. That's logical because that's where I come from, but it's actually not fully optimized from an SEO perspective, because although I'm using some SEO techniques, I'm using different SEO techniques to most SEOs, and I'm focusing on the marketing, the branding, and importantly, most importantly, communication. Clear communication about who I am, what I do, who I serve, why I'm credible, and also making sure that I'm communicating to Google and indeed my audience what the focus should be. So you'll notice the website is designed by silos. You have a silo for digital marketing. You have a silo for my previous career, one of my previous careers as a cartoon maker. You have a silo for the music group, the Barking Dogs from the 1990s, which was my previous career. And that's very, very important, because that allows Google to say, well, these are three different careers. And then I communicate in each of those silos the dates and the importance of each of the silos to ensure that Google is focusing and prioritizing and amplifying the digital marketer message. And recently I changed Google's opinion of me, and this is lovely. It's brand, personal brand repositioning. Google recognized me as a digital marketer.
Yeah.
I then used CaddyCube Pro, which is our proprietary SaaS platform, and my team to educate Google that I'm now an entrepreneur. I want to be considered to be an entrepreneur. Now, I've always been an entrepreneur, but I didn't get Google to focus on it. It was focusing on digital marketing marketer because that's what I was trying to sell. Now I'm trying to sell myself as a CEO of a company who's had multiple companies, who I realized the other day, my first company, WTPL Music, founded in 1991, is still going strong. My second company, Ups 10, founded in 2000, is still going strong 24 years later. CaddyCube, founded in 2015, is still going strong 9 years later. So I'm actually an entrepreneur more than I am anything else. And that repositioning, you can see in Google, when you search my name, it says Jason Barnard, entrepreneur. And it presents me as the CEO of CaddyCube, with LinkedIn, with Twitter, with a knowledge panel, which we'll talk about a little bit in a little while, focusing very much on my entrepreneurial career rather than the digital marketing as before. And I'm saying all of that because that's Google's representation. It's Google's opinion of me. And Google has defined what my personal brand is. But behind the scenes, I defined what it was using my personal website. And to do that, I actually had to redefine my positioning throughout my entire digital ecosystem. So I actually also redefined it for my audience. So my human audience, whenever they research me, not search me, research me, keep seeing me on all these different platforms as an entrepreneur. And what, for example, I signed up for Forbes, Forbes.com, I now write for them. That's clearly an entrepreneurial website. I don't write so much for Search Engine Land because that's digital marketing. So what I've done is reposition myself in truth and in reality and then communicated that to Google. So I'm walking the walk, and that's the huge thing that people miss. I'm not tricking the algorithms. I'm educating them. And to educate them, I also have to walk the walk and change actually what I'm doing or where I'm focusing. And that's huge.
It is.
I think that's the second time I've said that's huge. All of this is huge.
Yeah, but I love it. I love it. And I have so many questions to unpack all this. So maybe following up on your last point. I'm looking at your website right now, and on the podcast section, your guest appearances. And they basically are 10 pages of 9 articles, 12 articles each. So that's probably about in the hundreds of interviews given, right? Yep. Those people, those podcasters, as we will post something on their website, maybe from episodes you've recorded years ago. How do you make sure that that specific branding that you want now to Google to interpret sticks with that? Do you reach out individually to those podcasters and say, hey, my personal brand online has changed. Please adapt the text according to this? Or how do you manage all that?
That's a great question, because as you immediately realize, it's a huge task when you've got a sizable digital footprint that I do.
Right.
So what our proprietary platform does, KQ Pro, is it scans the entirety of the internet through the lens of Google. It's a long story of how we do it. But it's a smart piece of technology that can figure out exactly what's important, both to Google and to your audience. And then it can pull out all of these references to you, and for me it's literally thousands, and prioritize them. So I know which ones I need to change first and which ones I can probably ignore. And me and my team just go through the list from the top to the bottom, and we change everything we can, and we reach out to people, as you said, to ask them to change on their website. And we know which ones matter and which ones don't. So we know which ones we need to insist upon and which ones we don't. And there's an interesting point. I was interviewed by a guy called Milosz Krzyzanski, who's a Polish SEO. And a year ago, that was a very important source of information for Google about me. Since I repositioned myself to entrepreneur, that piece of information is no longer very important to Google, and no longer so important to my audience, because my audience is now people who are looking for entrepreneur CEOs. And our machine reflects that. So Milosz used to be listed number 6, I think, in our list of important sources that we needed to correct if we were changing something about my information. He's now number 60 or 70. So I don't need to worry about that particular reference to me. He's a friend, so I can ask him to change it, and I do. And if he doesn't, it doesn't matter, because we know we've got so much, and that's the point, weight of evidence. We've got 69 other sources that confirm what I do, and that weight of evidence in the favor of the entrepreneur is going to win. So the answer to that question is there is a lot, but it doesn't matter for me because I can manage it. If you don't have a prioritized list, you don't know which ones. You have to change them all, and you've created yourself a huge amount of work.
So how do you define?
Sorry?
Go ahead.
Well, no, so I mean, the huge advantage of software, I mean, we all know we use ChatGPT, we use technology to simplify our lives and to make our work simpler, faster, easier, and less boring, to be honest. And that's what KQ Pro does. That's what our platform does. And that's the service we offer, is to say, we know which buttons to press. We know which things need to be changed. And we can change Google's point of view of you in an afternoon. Literally, right, in an afternoon. And the best example we've had of that is Meta did it. When they switched from Facebook to Meta, they did it incredibly well. And that was a huge job. That's incredibly impressive. Because in an afternoon, everything changed. All the right things changed. They did an amazing job. And then we tried to emulate that. In fact, we didn't try. We succeeded in emulating that with my podcast. And as you know, podcasts are mentioned in all sorts of places. And we changed the name of my podcast from With Jason Barnard to Branded Search and Beyond with Jason Barnard. And in one afternoon, we changed at least 300 references to the podcast.
Yeah.
And the next day, the search result for With Jason Barnard showed Branded Search and Beyond with Jason Barnard. And the Branded Search and Beyond search engine results page showed the podcast with its new name. So two things we either learned from that. Number one is it's very easy when you've got the machine. Takes an afternoon. Simple. Number two is if you can do it in an afternoon, Google will switch. If you spread it out over 3 months, we had a client called Olga Zarr. She spread it out over 3 months. It took her a year to change her name. So do it effectively, okay, prioritize it correctly, and do it very fast. Because her problem was that Google saw one name on one website, another name on another website, then the first name on another website, and that consistency was lacking. So Google got confused. And indeed, it dropped her search result for a while because it was so unsure. And that brings me to one last point, and then I'll let you back in. Confidence. If Google has confidence, it will show the information you want. If Google understands the information that you want, but it isn't confident, it probably won't show it. Mm. And so don't ever underestimate the importance of Google's confidence. And that's one place where SEO and what we're doing differ, is SEO doesn't focus on confidence. We focus on confidence.
Jason, I love that you're answering my questions before I ask them. But let's dig a little bit deeper into this. No, I love it. I love
it. I could just interview myself then.
Exactly. So, because my point was going to be, if we, for the SEO aficionados listening to us right now, when you try and optimize your SEO on an offsite, what you want to do is to do what could happen naturally. Because if Google sees that you're trying to cheat the system or do something that wouldn't typically happen naturally, I'm talking about anchor text, I'm talking about number of backlinks, I'm talking about where the backlinks are, all those kind of things, Google will penalize you for that. And things don't happen overnight as well. But what in you seem to be explaining here is brand SERP is actually the other way around. The fastest you act upon all the mentions to your name throughout the whole internet, the better it is for Google. Am I understanding that correctly?
Yeah, and you're bringing us into another huge point, is that this isn't SEO, but it uses SEO techniques and tactics. Right. So one great example is typically with SEO, people will talk about link juice, and it's terribly precious. I need to keep my link juice, the power of my links. All the links coming in, I want to keep them, so I won't link out.
Mm-hmm.
With brand SERPs, it's the opposite. Well, not quite the opposite. You do want links in. That's great. It helps. Mm-hmm. But what you really want is mentions. And then you link out to them to point out to Google, this is indeed the same person. Because it's probably guessed that it's that person. But if you have your website, and we come back to that, mm-hmm. focal point is your website, and I link to something, which is why I've got the 100 podcasts or 200 podcasts, I link to all of them saying, this is actually, yes, this is me. So Google understands that it's me, understands that I'm saying that it's me, so it can easily identify exactly who I am. So it now has 100 pieces of corroborative information about Jason Barnard as an entrepreneur. So it's up to me to create focus by giving those backlinks out, whereas a traditional SEO, and I like to now say traditional SEO and modern SEO. This is modern SEO because it applies to everything. Understanding is the foundation. You have to give those outbound links because you have to confirm which sources are talking about you. So the precious link juice needs to be shared, which is lovely for me because right at the beginning in 1998 when I started, giving links to people was normal. It was part of the behavior of the internet because the internet was this research, once again.
Yeah.
Idea of hopping from place to place. But since Google started dominating, people focus not on research but on search.
Mm-hmm.
And they hoard and keep all of these links. They try to keep people on their website. And we're going back to research, which is lovely.
Yeah. Why would the red stop, Jason?
Branding.
Really? So it goes to that level of details.
Yeah. Well, when you're looking at your personal brand, you need absolute consistency and you need absolute clarity. And you need every source to have that clarity and have that consistency. So from my perspective, I need to use the same, what we call semantic triple, which is actually subject, verb, object. Jason Barnard is an entrepreneur. I use that on every single page at some point when somebody talks about me. Back to your point, if I wanted to change that, I would have to ask all of the podcasters to change, or if I was doing it manually, all of the podcasters to change Jason Barnard is a musician, for example, or Jason Barnard is a voice actor. I would have to ask them all. With Caligu Pro, we need to just ask the ones we know are important. I would tend to want to ask them all because I'm a perfectionist.
Right.
Also, the photo. If I decide to brand myself with the red shirt, I would also need to ask them to change the photo. But that's for humans more than it is for the machines. Because when people see this red shirt, visually, they immediately recognize it as me. They don't need to see my face. They don't need to understand or read my name. And although my name is everywhere, the red shirt adds that visual element that attracts attention, that people don't need to read my content to understand it's me. And I'll give you a quick example. Is when I get clients on a call, they often come to me and say, I know what you do. I know what I want. How much does it cost? And I say, well, why is this so simple? And they say, because every time I research the topic of brand SERPs, knowledge panels, personal branding, I see you. I see that red shirt.
Mm-hmm.
And what they've done is researched and seen the red shirt all over the place. They haven't necessarily digested the content or even read the title. They've just seen the red shirt. And then when they search on Google, because we focus so much on videos and images, in the search results on Google, it's not just those blue links. Google includes video, it includes images across their entire search results. People say, I just saw that red shirt so often. So the red shirt is the visual clue that gets people to notice and recognize me at a glance. There you go.
Indeed. When we Google Jason Barnard, well, the first website is your website. But first, we have pictures. Super interesting.
And the nice thing is I don't even like red. I never wore red. I never wear red. So literally, as I was coming onto this show, I took off a green shirt and put on the red shirt. And I've done that for 9 years. I never appear in public professionally without the red shirt.
But so why red then?
Because of music.
Okay.
I was playing a gig with a friend in 2015 because I used to be a professional musician. I played punk folk double bass for 10 years. Made a career in France playing punk folk double bass. We played with the Mano Negra, who you probably know. Played on the same festival as Bob Dylan, the Pogues, some, you know, pretty big bands. We did relatively well. We sold, I think, 40,000 music albums and played 660 gigs. And through the entire career, I wore blue.
Okay.
Then I played a gig with the guy, the lead singer, 9-10 years ago. And long story about why I was wearing a red top, but I was wearing Manu Chao's Adidas red top. And halfway through the gig, I threw it to a friend of mine as a joke. It was a personal joke between us, and it was a lot of fun. And somebody videoed the whole show. Okay. And I watched the show, and I realized that in the first half, when I was wearing Manu Chao's red shirt, I looked really interesting and cool. And in the second half, while I was wearing a blue T-shirt, you didn't even notice me. And that day, I thought, for standing on stage, I will always wear red. And luckily for me, 2 months later was my first ever conference. I wore red, and I haven't stopped.
Man, such a storyteller. So cool. Talk to me a bit about knowledge panel then, Jason. What is that?
I love knowledge panels. Knowledge panels are such an interesting part of the search landscape. And I'm the only person who is truly focused and specialized in this. And John Mueller, who's a spokesperson for Google, has said, outside of Google, nobody in the world understands more about knowledge panels than Jason Barnard. He's also said, for Google engineers, these are just algorithmic. Jason Barnard is the only person who actually understands how to change them, update them, because they're algorithms, they're knowledge algorithms. They're outside of the Google engineer's human control to any incredible detail. They can control them globally, but they don't control individual aspects. What we've done at CaliCube is bring in a control of the facts that Google's understood. So a knowledge panel, I'll tell you exactly what it is. When you search on Google on desktop, and you see an information box on the right-hand side, that is a knowledge panel. It contains the facts that Google has understood about the entity, the person, or the company. Right, a knowledge panel on Google is the information box on the right-hand side when you search on Google. So, for example, if you search my name, Jason Barnard, JasonBarnard, on desktop, you will see an information box on the right-hand side that contains Google's summary of the facts about me. Now, remember that these are facts according to Google. On the left-hand side, you see Google's recommendations. So at CaliCube, we look at it on the right-hand side, facts, the knowledge panel, on the left-hand side, recommendations. And those facts come from Google's knowledge graph. And Google's knowledge graph is like a machine-readable encyclopedia, but absolutely massive. So if you think of Wikipedia, Wikipedia has 6 million articles in English. Google's knowledge graph contains 54 billion articles. It understands 54 billion people, companies, music albums, events, music groups. And when it understands one of them, it will show that knowledge panel, that factual information on the right-hand side. And that is key. We were talking earlier on about understanding and knowledge being the key to Google and to SEO for the future. That knowledge panel represents Google's understanding, its confident understanding about you when you search your own name. And we say knowledge is power. It's never been more true. And the reason Google shows a knowledge panel is not to just show off it knows the facts. The user-friendliness of that knowledge panel is that the person doesn't need to click through to multiple websites to research you. They can just show you a summary on the right-hand side. And so as an individual or a corporation, you want to be absolutely sure that the facts are correct and that that knowledge panel looks as impressive as possible. Because when somebody sees a knowledge panel when they search your name or your corporation name, they think, wow, that person or that company is impressive. Search my name, Jason Barnard, and you'll think, wow, he looks like a superstar. Obviously, I'm not. But what we can do at CaliCube is amplify how Google represents us in terms of influence, authority, trustworthiness, credibility. And that's for a corporation or a person. Knowledge panels are the most delightful thing in the entire universe.
But so how do I, because indeed, again, I'm Googling live what you're telling me, Jason. I'm Googling Jason Barnard, and indeed, we have this thing. I didn't know it was called the knowledge panel. But when I Google Guillaume Jouvencel again, I don't have one. How do I get my very own knowledge panel?
Clear, consistent corroboration. It really is as simple as that. But
okay.
For Google, what's happening is it looks around the internet and it finds multiple people with the same name. And it isn't sure who is who, both because the name is shared between multiple people and because individual people are not consistent. If you are consistent about the information you're presenting about yourself on all the different platforms you appear on, Google will understand that it's the same person each time. But at that point, it's understood and it becomes confident because of the repetition. Google learns by repetition. It's a child that's trying to learn. It's trying to learn everything about the world, fill up the knowledge graph, the machine-readable encyclopedia, with every fact about every person and every corporation. And as it understands, it adds it to its memory. It has perfect recall. So remember that.
Yeah.
This is vital because it has perfect recall. You get it wrong, it remembers. And as it gathers more and more corroborative facts that are clear and consistent and confirm what it already knew, it will build confidence. And you can help it in multiple ways. Number one, by being clear and consistent across all of your digital footprint, all of your digital ecosystem, all of your social media channels, all your podcast appearances. But number two, create what we call an entity home. We're back to the website here. Create your own personal website that Google can refer to check the facts. Google calls it the point of reconciliation. And John Mueller from Google, who I mentioned, who said Jason Barnard knows more about this than anybody outside Google, calls that the point of reconciliation. We call it the entity home. And he said, we are actively looking for the point of reconciliation because we're reconciling this fragmented information about any individual or company around the world to create understanding for Google the child, as we call it at CaliCube. Then with the entity home, your own website, you link to all of the different corroborative sources so that Google understands that it's indeed you. And that will help it immensely in understanding step one and building confidence step two.
Why not?
Oh, and anybody can get a knowledge panel.
Cool.
So literally anybody. I'll give you an example. Elisa Reyes, who's the head of CaliCube Pro, who does the client work. She's super smart, does amazing work. And she has, you won't find it on Google when you search, she has what we call a knowledge panel sprout. And that means that Google has understood, but it's not confident enough to understand to show it when you search a name. And she only has three social media profiles. So that's another important point. I have an immense amount of information about me online, and it's a lot for me to manage. I have to manage it ongoing all the time. I have to track it. I have to update it. This is an ongoing process because there's so much information about me online. Elisa is playing the trick of having only three profiles and yet getting Google to understand and be sufficiently confident to create an entry in its machine-readable encyclopedia. Now she needs to build up a little bit of credibility, a couple more profiles, and a little bit more confidence, and it will start to show the knowledge panel when you search her name.
Why not just working at Google, Jason? Because I guess you're going to have a pretty interesting position there.
They never asked me.
If they do, would you go?
No, probably not. No, in fact, definitely not.
Okay.
If Google asked me to work for them, I would refuse for multiple reasons. Number one is I really enjoy what I'm doing. I was invited to a knowledge graph conference, and a knowledge graph conference is where people who build knowledge graphs, which is the machine-readable encyclopedia, talk about how they build knowledge graphs, mm-hmm. how they're building the machine-readable encyclopedia. And I was invited to speak at the conference a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And my question to them is, why do you want me to speak? Because I don't actually understand enough about knowledge graphs. And they said, because you're the only person we know in the world who can change a knowledge graph from the outside without having access to it. And that's a magic trick we want to learn how to do. And so from my perspective, from the outside of Google, I can play a magic trick that I truly enjoy and is truly valuable and helpful to people who want to build their personal brand or corporations who want to build their brand. But the other thing is, it's not limited to Google, because I'm also educating and changing the knowledge graphs of Bing, of ChatGPT, of Perplexity, and all of these machines, Apple even. So just working for Google, I'll be restricted to Google. But right now, I can play, and I call it playing, but it's actually very serious work with all of these algorithms, because the system we use, the system I just described, which is very simple and you can DIY it, the system we have works for all of these machines because they all function in exactly the same manner. And talking of DIY, I talked multiple times about our services. We're not looking for lots of clients. We're looking for clients who want us to take the work off their shoulders. If you want to do the work yourself, just go to calicube.com, K-A-L-I-C-U-B-E.com.
Mm-hmm.
We have so many resources. We've got millions of words written, recorded, video that explain everything you need to do to manage your personal brand or your corporate brand online. Not just search engines, but for people researching you and for that search result on your brand SERP, for the search engine results page for your brand name. So I want people to be able to do it themselves, so we share everything. We've got PDF downloads that explain the processes, exactly what you need to do. I believe this is super important for humanity, which sounds like a huge claim, but I want to share this ability to control, this ability to build self-determination in a world of AI that's pretty scary. I'd like to touch on the fact that although all of this works for engines like Google, Bing, so on and so forth, it's actually audience-focused. So we come back to that point about walking the walk.
Right.
So we've got that at the beginning and at the end, because I think that's the important thing that we've been under-communicating.
Right.
Is that although we're using the machines as a measuring stick and as an insight into what needs to be done,
mm-hmm.
because we can include this. So what the Calicube Pro platform does
mm-hmm.
is it asks Google what it doesn't know and what it isn't confident about and what it's confused about.
Yeah.
And then we use that, our algorithms figure out exactly what needs to be done to fill in the gaps for what it doesn't know,
yeah.
support it and build confidence in the things it isn't confident about. And that allows you to build up Google's understanding and its confidence in the understanding. But to do that by filling the gaps, we're actually placing ourselves where the audience is standing, building up the credibility in the eyes of the audience and presenting the right content to the right people at the right time on the right platforms. Because all Google is doing, and these other machines are doing, is reflecting what they see us doing between human beings. Because at the end of the day, these machines are simply an interface between two human beings, you and your audience. And they're just trying to match you to your audience in the way that you should be matching yourself to your audience anyway across your entire digital ecosystem. So at the end of the day, using the machines to understand what's right and wrong about what you're doing, fixing that so the machines represent you correctly, also fixes the fundamental problem of you not actually doing what you're supposed to be doing from a branding and marketing perspective across your entire system. So what we're doing is fixing your branding and marketing across your digital ecosystem, so you're standing in the right place for the right people, offering the right offers at the right time, and then packaging it so the machines can understand. And that's where SEO comes in. It's just the packaging of your branding and marketing that you should already be doing. Yeah. And that, for me, is the foundationally fundamental important thing about what we're doing at Calicube. And it's an original approach that nobody else that I know of has.
Mm-hmm.
And as I said, we're sharing it. Calicube.com, K-A-L-I-C-U-B-E.com. Go along, take all that material, take the PDFs, take the articles, learn to do it yourself. It's free. And it doesn't take the geeky SEO techniques that people think it does. It's all about branding and marketing. And the packaging for the search engines is simply clarity in your texts.
Mm-hmm.
It's consistency in your videos and your podcasts and your texts, and linking back and forth to make sure that Google understands that your website is the hub of everything that you do online. And if it's the hub of everything you do online, guess what happens? Your audience naturally end up on your website as well.
Jason, that was an absolute masterpiece about a topic that I didn't know anything about, Knowledge Panel and Brand SERP. But one thing we didn't touch upon is your podcast. So maybe can we wrap this up with you explaining to us what's your podcast story?
Right. Well, I started my podcast as an excuse to travel the world. I asked my accountant, can I just go to all these different conferences and pay for it with the company? And they said, only if you get one client per conference. That's the only way we can justify it from a fiscal perspective in France. So I said, well, if I create content, a podcast interview from each conference, does that work? Because I've got some value from the conference. They said, yes. So I picked up my rucksack, left my flat, became a full-time digital nomad, and I traveled from conference to conference interviewing people. So I didn't know anybody really in the SEO industry, and I just grabbed people who were talking about something interesting and said, can I do an interview with you about that? And I interviewed them in the corridor of the conference, released it as a podcast episode. And then I realized two things were happening. Number one is I was learning a lot. I've done 350 podcast episodes with different people with different specialities, and I've asked the questions that I wanted to ask so I could learn. So I know more about digital marketing and SEO than I could possibly have imagined before. So the podcast has been a great learning experience. But secondly, I started to be recognized, number one, for the red shirt, but also for the fact that I was interviewing these incredibly intelligent people who were sharing a lot of really, really good information, tips and tricks in SEO and then widely in digital marketing. And I became what we might call a thought leader, but I don't like the term thought leader as much as I like trusted, authoritative, influential person. I've become an influential, trusted, authoritative, credible person within my industry, digital marketing. So the podcast has brought me immense value from a learning perspective and from a brand positioning perspective. And on top of that, it's brought me some business. A lot of people who come to talk to me for sales calls, when they come in and say, I know what I want, I know what you do, how much does it cost, how long does it take?
Mm-hmm.
Have seen me on the podcast, have seen that I know what I'm talking about, have seen that these incredibly authoritative people are talking to me and sharing with me. And that's the last point, is a podcast is a great way to position yourself in the eyes of your audience, the people who come on the sales calls, as an influential, authoritative, trusted, credible member of that community, but also to educate Google that I'm an accepted, trusted, authoritative, influential person within that industry, because all of these people who are trusted and influential within the industry are willing to talk to me on my podcast.
Mm-hmm.
So it works both for Google and for your audience, and in fact, thirdly, for me, because I'm learning. So podcasting has been an absolute boon for me. It's been so, so much fun as well.
Absolutely amazing. Jason Barnard, ladies and gentlemen. Jason, if people want to learn more, well, I think that was literally the topic of this episode, but if they want to learn more, where should they go?
They should search my name, Jason Barnard, J-A-S-O-N-B-A-R-N-A-R-D. And the delightful thing about that is what you will see is what I call the Google business card. Mm-hmm. You will see all the facts about me in the knowledge panel, all accurate, all up to date, all exactly what I want it to be, because I control what Google shows, mm-hmm. because I can control the knowledge algorithm. And then on the left-hand side, as I said, the recommendations. And the recommendations is where Google feels that you would want to engage with me. Once again, I control that. So you will see my website if you want to come and learn more about me personally. Twitter, I'm on Twitter quite a lot. LinkedIn, it's where I do business on social media. My company website, CaliCube, if you want to do business with me straight away, if you're ready now to sign a contract with us, come to CaliCube. YouTube, go and watch videos there if you want to learn more. It's free. Search Engine Land, SEMrush, read my articles, learn more. And then there's all of the songs I wrote. Back in my career as a musician. If you want to listen to my songs, that's an option. So my brand SERP is my business card, and it's up to you how you engage with me. It's not up to me. That's the beauty of it.
Absolutely amazing.
The last question we ask all our guests, Jason, is the following. Three podcasts that you listen to yourself that you would recommend us, me, and our audience.
That's a tough one. Because... Well, I listen to my own podcast when the episode is incredibly helpful to me or my team.
Okay.
And it sounds really self-centered, but I actually listen to it because we're inviting guests who can teach me something.
Mm-hmm.
So I listen back a second time because I want to remember and truly understand what it is that they've told me.
Okay. Okay. So yours cannot be, it will be in the show notes anyways, but I need three that are not yours.
Three that are not mine. I actually don't listen to podcasts.
Really? You're the first one to tell me that, though. Interesting. Okay. What three books. Three things that you consume, then.
Oh, books. I can do books. Now, I started reading books. I stopped reading books about 15 years ago when my eyesight started failing, and I couldn't be bothered putting my glasses on to read a book, so I just stopped reading books. Right. And about 10 months ago, I transitioned from being a digital marketer to an entrepreneur CEO.
Mm-hmm.
And I found it such a struggle. It's such a different job. Being a CEO is so different to any other job I've ever had. And I needed to upskill very, 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 very fast. Mm-hmm. Because if you're a bad CEO, your company collapses.
Right.
And we've got 20 people working at CaliCube. They depend on me. And as a CEO, I have to get it right. So I've been reading a lot of books about how to be a CEO. Including, off the top of my head, How to Draw or Draw to Sell. I can't remember what the name of the book is, but it's how can you draw your ideas in order to communicate them to people?
Interesting.
That was really, really interesting because it gets me to understand how people's brains function.
Mm-hmm.
I read another book. I can't remember the name of the person who wrote it, but it's How to Never Lose Another Client Again.
Okay.
And it's all about the post-sale cycle.
Mm-hmm.
And if you think about the funnel, is we get the person at the bottom of the funnel, they sign up, you've got your sale, and then you just go, okay, there you go, that's my client, and we forget about them. And in fact, that's where you should really start treating them with care. And
100%.
There are 8 stages. Each one needs to be taken care of, onboarding, getting them engaged. If you don't get them engaged, they don't stay. Getting them to truly appreciate what you're doing. I can't remember what the 8 are off the top of my head. But then also get them to advocate for you. And people talk about advocacy, but they don't talk about the steps leading to advocacy. That you can't just go straight to a client and say, promote me, give me a review and tell everybody how wonderful we are. You need to build up to it, because if they're not engaged, and for me that was the critical one, if I can't engage them, they will never advocate. Mm.
That's two.
That's two. I've been told that I only read business books.
Mm-hmm.
But there's actually one book that I keep reading, and I've been reading it since I was a child. It's Sherlock Holmes. I love Sherlock Holmes.
Interesting.
Sherlock Holmes. And I have an amazing capacity to forget books and films. So the Sherlock Holmes stories, if I only read them once every 2 or 3 years, when I read them, about halfway through, I remember that I've read it before. And at the end, it's always a surprise.
Mm-hmm.
I have the capacity to read and reread Sherlock Holmes throughout my entire life. And that is one of my great pleasures.
Absolutely love it.
Jason, thank you so much for coming on Podcast Gurus.
It was an absolute pleasure. Thank you, Guillaume.